You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Matt Gillum in for Gemma Gaudet. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our Idaho Matters Reporter Roundtable. We're going to take a look back at some of the big events that made news around the Gem State this past week. Joining us are Don Day of Boise Dev, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, and Boise Weekly's George Prentice. Good to have each of you aboard for the roundtable today.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
There we go.
I was going to say good morning. I was like, it's not morning, and this repeats, and then I just was silent.
you made it weird.
Yeah, I did.
All right. So let's start with the State House. We're winding down with the session, but it's still going full bore. Let's talk about Medicaid. It's a tale of two Medicaid expansion proposals, it seems. Where are we with the so-called sideboards to the expansion?
It's actually three now, as of this morning.
So tell us.
The House introduced a new measure in committee that would slide money away from counties that they spend on folks who do not have insurance. And that went through committee and was sent to an interim committee beginning next week. So we have the initial House bill with a requirement of 20 hours of week of work attached to Medicaid. You've got a Senate bill that has voluntary work requirements, and now you have a third bill coming from the House. So good luck with all that.
Now, how do we parse this out? How do we combine these three into something that, no matter, it seems like at this point, is not going to be anything like what the voters passed back in November?
Well, I don't know about a three-way choice, but at least up until now, it's been this choice between are we going to go with what the voters passed, kind of a clean bill, or are we going to put some rules on it to make it more palatable to conservatives who have never supported Medicaid expansion. And so I think this is going to be the go-home bill. I think it's going to be the issue that's going to decide the fate of the legislative session. But I can't parse where it's going to end up. I do think it's interesting how each side kind of portrays the other as the bad guy, right? And so we're having this really interesting philosophical battle over the role of government in the lives of Idahoans, and instead it's being played out at this very kind of strange and political level.
It's turning into this very odd dance. Has the governor indicated at all where he stands on these newly competitive measures that keep coming out and we keep finding out new details about?
No, by design.
He has said that
just
he wouldn't let the legislature leave until they've got it figured out. So would he veto a bill with stringent sideboards? He hasn't indicated that.
But did he say that he supported the will of the people in terms of it getting Medicaid expansion out there, but that was sort of a blanket statement that did not sort of, you know, have clauses in there about additions, right?
That was a campaign statement too.
And okay. I mean, I'm now in the documentary film business and not in the daily journalism business, so I have not followed this super closely, but Governor Little has said that he would support some reasonable restrictions or limits to, you know, give it an Idaho flavor. So he has not condemned certainly sideboards that would encourage people to work, even if the question about requiring them to work is a different matter.
I think it's a fair bet that he'll sign one of those two. That said, it's a matter of when. And indeed, you've got a fair amount of legislators who keep always one eye on the calendar as opposed to their inbox. And so maybe it's a game of we have this conversation every year about why the legislature will adjourn by Easter. Well, I missed that law, but it's a bit of a parlor game at the State House, and indeed this is very serious business. If that vote last November proved anything, how serious it was. And I think it'll be a game of chicken and who gets exhausted first.
And I think we were talking last week on the roundtable about how that calendar really is driven by the fact that these citizen legislatures are often in the agriculture industry and have to get home and plant fields, right? Like, the legislature is kind of a part-time job for them. And on the other side, you have Governor Little, who said at the outset of this session, something has to be done before they go home, and was very clear about that. And so you kind of have this natural tension between we want to go home and you've got to do something. And that's where we are right now with this sausage squishing in the middle.
It is interesting how it's coming down to, will the legislature respect the will of the people, both on this bill and on the larger bill to change the way the initiative process works? And so you really have this kind of fundamental clash that's going to determine the fate of this session. How much respect does the legislature give to the citizens of Idaho? And I think it's not just a matter of Medicaid expansion. It's really a larger issue about you know, government itself. And I'm not sure how it's going to play out.
And I think it's about the balance between rural and urban Idaho. The initiative process right now gives preference to a majority vote. And as more and more people start to live in the more urban areas and elect more progressive people like they've done in Boise, that changes that dynamic for the state house, which is still weighted towards the conservative side. So it's a big issue that is rearing its head this year, but I think in coming years is going to be a fundamental challenge in the legislature and across the state in politics of all stripes.
And again, it's an entity where most of these men and women spend a lot of time running for office just to spend as little time as possible doing the business. And indeed, they're looking at the calendars come March, and then there's the game about the cardboard boxes start appearing in the hallways,
and
they
the
start
ugly
wearing
ties.
Ugly ties, yeah. and they turn into a little bit of whimsy. This is really serious business that needs to be taken care of.
Well, let's go on to the citizen initiative. What's going on with that bill? It was supposed to it makes getting initiatives on the ballot much more difficult. I mean, it's very clearly a response to the Medicaid passage back in November. So what is going on with that bit of legislation?
Yeah, I think despite protestations otherwise, this really is a reaction to legislators not liking the citizens vetoing their decision not to expand Medicaid.
But let's remember, it was already extremely difficult to get something on the ballot here. Like this doesn't happen frequently. It's not every election. It's not every other election that something gets on the ballot. It takes a heck of a lot of effort to get something on there as it was. Under these rules, they've tightened the vice even more.
Correct. Last November was the first time, and we had two of them, but it was the first time we'd had a citizen initiative qualify for the ballot box since the legislature made it harder 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And so it's already pretty hard. I think, I mean, Samantha was just telling us that the bill has passed out of the Senate. It's headed for the House. I think it's on a runaway, not a runaway train. I think this train is on the tracks and it's headed for passage. I think it's going to be, how do the citizens react when they see what happens?
To
here?
Don's point, it's a rural city divide. It's maybe the plainest representation of that divide.
And a lot of states struggle with this. I mean, look at California, and it's the opposite. The people in the rural areas feel disenfranchised, and so you have Idaho, where the urban areas are starting to feel that way in some ways. And I don't think anybody's got a good solution on how you build solutions that make everybody happy. That's kind of what politics breeds, is problems in that area. But as a state, figuring out a way to do that is going to make us all more successful if they can come to a way.
I think it adds a little bit of spice also to the census and the next round of redistricting, because I think I think these dots connect to how we govern and even the size of our legislative districts, et cetera, because our cities are growing. It's a fact.
We're speaking with George Prentice of Boise Weekly, Don Day of Boise Dev, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television. Now, you guys have been here for a while. I'm wondering if over the years, you know, one of the arguments they make for this initiative, making it more difficult, is that they don't want it to be willy-nilly like in California, where there can be numerous initiatives on a ballot. Has that ever been a problem here before, before rules were easier?
As far as numbers, no.
No. I mean, I've lived in Idaho for 18 years, and the statewide votes on these kind of things are few and far between. So this has not been California or Oregon-style initiative madness. So I think it strikes me, as well as other people, that it's a bit disingenuous to be freaking out over or panicking over what is likely not to be an overabundance of these initiatives.
And, you know, you go back a while to when the citizens approved term limits via the initiative process, and the legislature, the next session, the ones affected by this, said, nope, threw it out. said, you know, this was out of state money and this isn't what the voters really want, even though that's what they said. And so the legislature and the initiative process have a long, tangled relationship that direct democracy versus representative democracy sort of tension, I think, isn't a new thing.
I think an interesting wrinkle to this is that if you remember this time last year, another initiative was trying to make its way to the ballot, the Historic Horse Racing Initiative. And one of the players in that is now lobbying for these new sideboards on getting a future initiative on. And who knows if it's sour grapes or not, but the irony is too thick.
Yeah.
I have no idea where it's going to all end up. It just strikes me that this is a clash of values that we're experiencing in our state, and there is no obvious or easy answer to this question.
All right. Well, very quickly, do you think that if something like this initiative, this process to make initiatives harder, will people get angry? Will this truly affect change? Will people get riled up, or will it just be sort of a shrug and a, well, that's how it is?
People didn't get riled up when the term limits vote was overturned and they voted for it. So
how do you put an initiative on the ballot against an anti-initiative effort?
Right? You have to meet the new threshold, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. That said, will people be angry? Absolutely. Will it be tangible? Absolutely. But this is a numbers game. And it's really, really hard to put something on the ballot now.
The Reclaim Idaho people who qualify the Medicaid issue for the ballot are going to be upset. And they've proven to be effective. And can they translate this into action? We'll see.
Here in studio are Don Day of Boise Dev, Bill Manning with Idaho Public Television, and George Prentice with Boise Weekly. Let's take the temperature down a little bit. George, you are our main man for movies. We can now have a beer and wine in historic movie theaters. What's that about?
Indeed. That was signed into law by the governor, and this indicates that we can have beer and wine anytime, including when minors are present, in what are known as historic movie theaters, and that includes The Egyptian here in Boise. And I think three films in the Magic Valley and three theaters in the Magic Valley and a historic theater up in Sandpoint and the Pix in Nampa, which has been dark. But if you're going to be selling beer and wine, that's a pretty good reason to turn the lights back on.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal because up until now, there were only two movie theaters in all of Idaho who could serve beer and wine, one in Boise, one in Sun Valley. And this is a game changer for a place like The Egyptian in Boise. It's law now.
The plan is that these places will now be much, much more able to support themselves with the selling of beer and wine?
I don't think it's a surprise to anyone to know that to run a theater, it's all about the concessions. And if you're selling beer and wine, you're keeping the lights on.
All right. Beer, wine, and raisinettes. There
yep.
we go.
Yep.
Don, the old Franklin school site up on the Boise Bench, it was going to be a gas station, but that was the plan for a while. You're reporting that has gone out the window for something completely different.
Yeah, so this just breaking here in the last little bit, the city of Boise has entered into negotiations to acquire the 4.7-acre parcel that primarily housed the school and the parking lot for Franklin School. People who are familiar with this site, it's in Boise at Franklin and Orchard. The city has a park in the back portion of the lot, but Maverick had owned the kind of the frontage around the streets, and they had planned to build a gas station, a fuel canopy, and some other commercial buildings. They last year said, we're not quite sure, and then in January they put the whole piece of property up on the market. So the city of Boise saw that and negotiated an agreement to buy the site for about $1.9 million, and the city council will consider this on Tuesday whether to move forward with this. They will then move into due diligence, and pending that, they're looking at the site for some different things. Affordable housing is, as most people know, a big focus in the city of Boise, and leaders yesterday when chatting with me said that is something that they are very much looking at for this site.
The neighborhood, this is going to be actually affordable housing, not more condos.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the city, by buying it, has a little bit more say in the process. Boise Dev, I've been reporting on a lot of condo projects in the last couple of weeks, like four of them, in fact. And
Don Day, the condo king.
Yeah, I feel like it. And they're all, for the most part, luxury condos. So there's no firm plan in place for this site, and the city will take some time, work with the neighborhood association. I talked to them, and they are just thrilled. They were not happy about a gas station on that site. You know, going from a historic school to a convenience store is definitely kind of maybe a bit of a letdown. And so they're pretty excited about what's possible. The president of the neighborhood association chatted with me and said, you know, we'd love to see something like Bound Crossing. So we'll see what happens there, but that's going to be something to keep an eye on and is a key redevelopment option on the bench.
But the city could use the model that they've used for Adair Manor, where they used city property and they rented it for $1 a year, and the deal was to put together affordable housing.
Yeah, and I think that that's I didn't ask about that specifically, but I do think that that's on the table as they consider what is the best and highest use. It's a phenomenal site for any kind of development, really. It's on two major transit routes, right across from Fred Meyer. There's lots of services in the area. Obviously, it will surround a brand new park. So you look at that, about 5 acres, and think, boy, there's some interesting things we could do here. The city's been really focusing on density, so I think you'll see more than just single-family homes on that site. But that's all to come and will be part of a process that will kick off in earnest on Tuesday at the city council meeting.
All right, we'll be keeping our eye on that. We'd be remiss, especially this Friday, to not say that we are about to enter peak Treefort this weekend. It is upon us yet again. Let's dive into the madness. Bill, the festival is in its 8th year now. It brings out a lot of people to the city. There's a lot of cross-cultural pollination going on as well. Can you explain?
Well, I'm still trying to get my head around peak Treefort versus whatever the opposite of peak Treefort is. But what's always interested me is this is just more than about music. It's just more than about beer and about even the stories and the food. There, something happens downtown Boise when Treefort starts that is unlike anything else that happens in Boise. And, you know, since the Boise River Festival died many years ago, there has not been that kind of thing that the whole community kind of rallies around. And I see Treefort kind of filling that role. I noticed that Katie Moeller with the Idaho Statesman did a piece this week looking at the economic impact. And 24,000 people bringing $10.9 million of development or revenue into the city. That's a big deal. It's probably not as big as the Albertson Open, the Boise Golf Tournament, which has 17,000 overnight attendees, and certainly more than the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, probably more than the Twilight Criterium. So it's a big deal. I don't think it's going to challenge 30,000 people 6 times a year at Bronco Stadium for economic impact. But it has become one of the really franchise recognizable issues that Boise has. And, you know, kudos to the people who pull this off. They bring in the Shriners. They bring in the hipsters. They've got people from my demographic. They've got people of my children's demographic. It's really a cool thing.
But that $10 million is spread a lot more evenly, though, across the downtown area. Bars, restaurants, hotels. There's a lot of beneficiaries of Treefort.
I saw Katie's piece and I saw Margaret Carmel's piece and George's shop this week on economic development. And I thought, boy, this is a big deal, because I remember when the River Festival would come around every year, the big story that especially the TV media would be the economic impact. And I hadn't seen that a lot for Treefort. And now I think you're getting to the point where people realize this pulls in a lot of dollars for the local economy.
We are speaking with Don Day of Boise Dev, George Prentice of Boise Weekly, and Bill Manning with Idaho Public Television. We'd always like to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter. It's KBSX915. Now, George, we're going to turn to you again. You are not only our resident movie buff, but you are an avid college basketball fan.
I am.
Boise State's women's basketball is going places. Can you give us some updates on the Lady Broncos?
Well, the NCAA women's tournament begins tomorrow, and the Lady Broncos are in the tournament. They're in Corvallis, where they will play Oregon State, which is located in Corvallis. Boise State is seeded 13th. Oregon State is seeded 4th. We should make note that Boise State has never won an NCAA tournament game. That said, making it to the tournament is a major achievement. This is their third year in a row. One of the lead scorers for Boise State, Brady Hodgins, if she can get over her average of 13 points a game, I think they've got a shot. What's interesting is that one of the stars of Oregon State is a product of Mountain View High School, and that's Destiny Slocum. So there's all kinds of reasons to watch this game. It'll be fun. It'll tip off about 1:30 our time on ESPN2. there are certain games that transcend sports. This ought to be a fun event. And goodness knows, lots of local tie-in.
All right. How is everybody's bracket doing? Have we started that?
Second place in our pool, so I feel pretty good right now.
I've got six brackets. So
they're bound to win, right?
So, well, let's
You're just
hope.
Competing with yourself.
Michigan State, eventually. I don't think that Duke is going to take it all, but I might be in the minority there.
But, I don't have a bracket, but I think it's amazing when we're talking about women's sports in Boise instead of men's sports. And what a great development. Not so great for the men's team, but, you know, the notion that we're talking about athletics at this level is a really special thing.
One other side note, Boise State has a local swimmer competing in the NCAA National Championships tomorrow. So that's happening down in Texas. And again, the women are the front of the sports section as well. They should be this weekend.
All right. Well, from local sports to local markets, Don Albertsons has been making a splash with its fancy new stores that feature everything from full hot bars to cocktails. Are more of these food temples on the way?
So I don't know if these ones will be food temples. I do like that, and they might put that in their marketing. But Albertsons is planning three more stores around the Treasure Valley, one in the Barber Valley, which some people call Harris Ranch, one in Fast Growing Star, and another one in South Meridian. And they've acquired the land for all these. I've reported on these, and every time I talk about Albertsons, people go, okay, but what about the one in my neighborhood? So I chatted with Kathy Holland, who is the director of public relations right over across the street there, and she said they haven't made a decision yet. They're re-evaluating which ones they build when. They had said they had to get through the Broadway store and the Market Street store to decide on these, and then they'll start working on it. I don't think you're going to see bars in these. They're more traditional format stores. But for people who are in areas that are a little underserved with grocery, which I think all three of those are, they're excited to see these happen. So we'll keep following that on.
It'll be the first of its kind for Barber Park.
Yeah, the Barber Valley right now, I actually live out there, and all it really has is a convenience store. And in that area, Albertsons is planning a smaller format store. So it's actually kind of like the opposite of what they just built in Meridian, which is about the largest grocery store in anywhere.
Is Albertsons doing this in other markets, you know, these food temples, or is there's something happening here that's unique?
Their plan is they want to have one of these kind of Market Street type format stores in each of their divisions. So you could see a Safeway Marketplace, Market Street in California, or a Tom Thumb Market Street on the East Coast. The idea is...
So they're expanding this model throughout their portfolio.
Yeah. So the idea for them is we're going to build these big showcase stores. The divisions can learn from them. And then some of these ideas might then flow back out into some of the more traditional stores. So not only is it a place, and if you've been to that one at Eagle and Fairview, we went, I think, a week ago, and it was still packed. Every single register in the place open with lines. It speaks to Boiseans and Meridians' love of new things, but you walk in there and there's a lot to see and do. So it serves as a place for them to sell groceries, certainly, but it's also a lab for them to get ideas for other places.
The industry is fascinating. I spoke to the new executive director at the Boise Co-op and asked her what's the chance of because now they have two locations, yeah. One out at the Village, and I said, what's the chance of a third location in the next 3 years? And she said, a very good chance.
Yeah, and I'm hearing another Trader Joe's is in the offing, too, so people love grocery stores.
Who doesn't love to buy stuff? Thanks to our gang for taking time out of their Treefort weekend to drop by. We have been talking to Don Day of Boise Dev, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, and Boise Weekly's editor and cinema insider, George Prentice.
Stop it.